It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 351. I'm your host, John Stolness, from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. You can follow The Good Fight, at The Good Fight. And coming up, we're going to go guest-free this week. I had something lined up, but it fell through at the last moment. But that's okay. It'll just be you and me chatting here for the next little while. We've got a special Patreon mailbag edition of the podcast. I'm going to answer some of the remaining Patreon questions that have come through over the last couple of days. Of course, that's a special thing we do for Patreon members of Hittin' Season. Whenever we do a mailbag, they get first crack at questions. And so if you would like to join the Patreon mailbag and be a Patreon member of Hittin' Season, all you have to do is sign up on the $5 a month tier and by going to patreon.com/hittin'season, and you can do that. We're going to talk about the baseball cheating scandal as well. More shoes have dropped. It has been a wild day here on Thursday with the New York Mets making some news and some more stuff coming out about the Astros. It's really getting crazy. We had a big shakeup in the National League East as far as player movement is concerned, and I'm going to give you some other news and notes about the Phils, including some stuff on Sir Anthony Dominguez, Odubel Herrera, Drew Smyly finds a new home, and I'll have your stat of the week. So there's obviously a lot to get to here on the podcast. So let's start things off with the cheating scandal with the Houston Astros and the Boston Red Sox, and now the New York Mets enter the picture. And this was a really bad week for the National League East, by the way. We'll get to all the reasons why in just a second. But the New York Mets, as has been speculated for the last few days or so, since his name was mentioned in the Major League Baseball investigation regarding the Houston Astros, Carlos Beltran was essentially fired by the New York Mets before he ever managed a game. 2 months he lasted with the New York Mets. Of course, his status was in jeopardy once Major League Baseball announced the results of their investigation against the Astros cheating scandal on Monday. Beltran, of course, the only player from that 2017 team that was named in the report because he had such a large role in it. And it got to a point with the New York Mets that the publicity around this has gotten so terrible, and it was going to be untenable that this guy would be able to lead a group of players, 26 men, on a night in, night out basis, when there was a good possibility he was a part of cheating against some of those same players. And that just was not going to work. It was untenable, especially in the wake of the Astros firing A.J. Hinch and Jeff Lunau. And then a couple days later, Alex Cora and the Boston Red Sox deciding to part ways. Of course, Alex Cora, the bench coach for that Astros team in 2017. His name was prominently mentioned as one of the ringleaders of the cheating scandal with the Astros as well. And so he was basically forced to step down as manager of the Red Sox after two very successful seasons, of course, winning a World Series in 2018. And Major League Baseball's investigation into the Red Sox continues, so there will be yet another shoe to drop at some point with all of this. But the Beltran news really came as no surprise on Thursday. GM Brody Van Wagenen announced it on Thursday afternoon in a statement. They just basically admitted they couldn't continue this way. And it's another black eye for the New York Mets. I mean, at least it's controversy follows that team. Bad luck follows that team around like a black cloud. It's really is unbelievable. I mean, at least the Houston Astros got a World Series out of A.J. Hinch. And at least the Boston Red Sox got a World Series out of Alex Cora. The Mets got 2 months of Carlos Beltran not doing anything. It's really, if it wasn't, if I was a Mets fan, I'd be, you have to laugh. If you're a Mets fan, how do you do anything other than laugh right now at this whole thing? Because it's a complete disaster. It's never ending. It's never ending for this organization. They had no choice. They had no choice. They had to fire Carlos Beltran because this cheating scandal is becoming a monster story in baseball. It's a regular national news story. This transcends sports. This is the largest cheating scandal since the performance-enhancing drug scandal. And some even more things came to light about the Houston Astros. Now, we're now starting to hear some, especially in the wake of the Beltran thing, some people who are close to Beltran apparently have been going on social media and telling about other things the Astros did in 2017, 18, and 19. One thing specifically that was mentioned is certain players wearing electronic buzzers that were taped to their chest underneath their t-shirt and uniform during games, and there would be somebody in the clubhouse who would send a buzzing signal, a signal that would create a buzzing feeling, a vibration against the player's upper chest if a breaking ball was coming. And none of this has been proven. As a matter of fact, Major League Baseball announced on Thursday that they looked into the allegations that there was some kind of electronic buzzing device that Astros players were using and found nothing to corroborate it. But there's a lot of kind of incidental confirmation that makes you really wonder, and it really places into doubt a lot of these guys. The main video that everybody's pointing to right now is a Jose Altuve video in which he had a walk-off home run against the Yankees in Game 6 of the American League Championship Series. It was a huge home run, obviously. And as he's coming towards home plate, he sees his teammates and he starts clutching his jersey. And he starts saying, don't rip my shirt. Don't rip off my shirt in Spanish. Why? Why would he do that? Why would you be so concerned about your shirt getting ripped off in the celebration? And immediately after the during the whole celebration, the team, jumps on home plate and everybody's crowding around him. And he's just holding on to his jersey. He's holding on to it really, really tight. And then he makes a beeline while his teammates are celebrating on the field. He makes a beeline for the clubhouse to put on a t-shirt over top his uniform. That's weird. Okay, that's just unusual. And he was asked about it by Ken Rosenthal, why he was, in the moments afterwards, why he was telling teammates not to tear off his shirt, and he said something about, like, I'm just shy, which obviously is a load of nonsense. Now, nothing is out there that proves Astros players were using buzzers. But apparently it's something that has been going around, something that has been talked about for quite a little while, and it may not be necessarily a well-kept secret. So there's more coming out on the Astros buzzers thing. Okay, that part of the story is not going away. There are so many layers to this Astros cheating scandal. I'm starting to wonder if some players won't really get caught up in it, because you've heard Jose Altuve's name associated with this, you've heard Alex Bregman's name associated with this, you've heard Josh Riddick's name associated with this. There has been no proof of wrongdoing. There has been no proof that these guys were wearing buzzers that would vibrate when somebody in the clubhouse would let them know that a breaking ball was coming. But given everything else the Astros were doing, it's not a bridge too far. It's not a leap to think that they would come up with something else to give them an advantage, especially on the road, where you could do this on the road. You can't set up a trash can and a video monitor in your road clubhouse, but you can set up a buzzing system on the road. So who knows? Who knows what the Astros have done? I'm sitting here with my big box of popcorn, watching it all happen and watching the New York Mets implode now. Because now what do the New York Mets do for a manager? I mean, the Astros interviewed Buck Showalter this week. I think the Mets will probably interview Buck Showalter as well. The Red Sox are looking for a new manager. We're less than a month before the start of spring training, and three teams are looking for a manager. This is, by the way, not the first time a manager has been fired before he's ever managed a game with his team. I think the only other time it's happened, and Jason Stark mentioned this on Twitter, was Wally Backman with the Arizona Diamondbacks back in 2004. I don't know how many of you guys remember this story, but Wally Backman, he was involved in a lot of bad stuff. He's involved in a lot of shady nonsense, and the Diamondbacks did not do their due diligence in vetting him, apparently. But before they hired Backman, they didn't do any background financial or criminal checks or anything like that, and so there were a couple of arrests and some financial problems that he apparently kept from the team, and it took him basically 4 days to say, okay, never mind, that was a really horrible decision. But that was 4 days. I mean, that was a record. That's never going to be broken again. This is pretty close. the Mets It's amazing all of the stuff that Mets continue to go through year in and year out. And so now they have to find another manager. And will they get Buck Showalter? They had a chance to get Joe Girardi, it seems. And Girardi is the Phillies manager. And you got to think the Phillies are happy with how that all worked out. So I mentioned that it's been a bad week for the National League East. Not only were the Mets forced to fire Carlos Beltran, but the other piece of bad news is that Josh Donaldson has surprisingly signed with the Minnesota Twins, a four-year, $92 million deal worth $23 million a year average annual value. I assumed he was going to sign with one of the Nationals or the Braves, but it appears as though those two teams didn't want to go as far as the Twins did, which is surprising to me. I'm really surprised they didn't go as far as the Twins did. I think the Nats probably came close, but probably wanted to do a deal with a bunch of deferrals. And so now both of these teams in front of the Phillies have suffered big losses in the middle of their lineup and were not able to replace it with Josh Donaldson. I assume the Braves were going to make a hard push to re-sign Donaldson. I assume the Nationals, once they lost Rendon, would make a big push to sign Donaldson, but they didn't. And now they're looking at different ways of filling that hole. I mean, Atlanta, in losing Donaldson, is losing a 5-win player, a guy with a .379 on-base percentage, a guy with a .521 slugging percentage. He had 37 home runs for them last year. So they lose all of that. And the Nationals have lost and not replaced Anthony Rendon, who was a 7-win player last year for them, had a .412 on-base percentage, a .598 slugging. He hit 34 homers, 126 RBIs, 117 runs scored. Those are two enormous bats that are missing from both of those lineups now. Atlanta will probably turn to some combination of their second-year man Austin Riley and Johan Camargo to play third base. Camargo was a nice player in 2018. He was worth 3.3 wins above replacement, hit 19 home runs in 134 games for them, but last year struggled in a reserve role behind Donaldson. He was worth negative .-0.5 FWAR with a .279 on-base percentage last year. As far as Riley goes, he's got great power, but he wasn't even put on the Braves NLDS roster last year. He had .279, .471 in 80 games for the Atlanta Braves. He did hit 18 home runs, so he has that power potential, but just a 5.4% walk rate in 2019. So they have question marks at third base. The Nationals have their own Alec Bohm-like prospect who's ready to get some ABs at that position. It looks like Carter Kieboom will get a chance to win that job. He hit .303, .409, .493 in AAA last year with 16 homers in 109 games. He's a really good-looking young player. Be interesting to see. I guess my guess is that Kieboom, who I think got a cup of coffee with the Nationals last year, probably starts the season on the team's 26-man roster. Might be the starting third baseman, although they will have Howie Kendrick and Asdrubal Cabrera to also play some third base too. But again, neither of those guys are Anthony Rendon. None of those guys are Anthony Rendon or Josh Donaldson. Now, the Braves are rumored to be interested in Marcelo Zuna to play a spot in their outfield to kind of replaced Donaldson's bat. He hit .243, .330, .474 last year with 29 homers and 89 RBIs in 130 games for the Cardinals. So that's a solid bat. It would certainly help their lineup out, but that's not a Josh Donaldson. And if they sign Marcelo Zuna, they may not regret that deal later on, because I think the Twins are going to regret the last 2 years of the Donaldson deal, but they also have the designated hitter. And maybe the National League will have the designated hitter by the time the last 2 years of Donaldson's deal comes around. But at the same time, I'm very surprised that the Braves or Nationals did not get Josh Donaldson. Instead, they're going to go with some combination of other players at those positions and look for the Braves to add a Marcelo Zuna or maybe even a Nicholas Castellanos is another name that's been mentioned. Those are the two best offensive players left on the board. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Sir Anthony Dominguez here, because I got an interesting Patreon mailbag question, and this is the first of a number of mailbag questions I'm going to answer on the podcast. David Hopman asks, when are the Phillies going to address their bullpen problems? I can't see them going into the season with what they have, hoping those guys are going to be healthy and also putting on a whole lot of weight into starters becoming relievers and being the answer to their prayers. And I couldn't agree with that more, David, especially in light of a Twitter post that Matt Gelb of The Athletic posted. It was concerning an update on Sir Anthony Dominguez's progress from Phillies pitching coach Brian Price. Price said, regarding Dominguez, he's throwing. As a matter of fact, he was chomping at the bit to get going. but he's on a throwing protocol set up by our training staff with some oversight from myself, Dave Lundquist, and Jim Gott. We had to kind of back him down a little bit because he was really chomping at the bit to be throwing, longer distances, closer to getting to the mound, etc. He's throwing. I'm confident he's going to be ready, but he's not going to be fast-tracked. We'll take our time with his evolution. He doesn't necessarily need 4 weeks of pitching in games. Well, here's the thing. Not to disagree with the Phillies pitching coach Brian Price, because Brian Price has forgotten more about pitching than I will ever know. But I think it does matter that he gets as much of a spring training as possible if we want him to be ready for opening day. I think he needs a 4 full weeks of pitching, if not in games, then in simulated games, because he hasn't pitched in a game since June 5th. He had an elbow injury, and it certainly makes sense to be cautious about it. I mean, I don't want the Phillies to rush him. That's not what I'm saying at all here. But it's clear the Phillies are counting on him to be an impact arm in the bullpen this season. And there are a lot of people who thought he needed elbow surgery at the end of last year. And doctors apparently have said, no, he doesn't. And they're going to try and get him back on the mound with rehab and with no surgery. I remain skeptical that they're going to be able to pull this off. And you know that they're counting on him to be an impact arm because they haven't added anything else this offseason to the bullpen. I mean, listen, there was enough reason to be concerned about Sir Anthony Dominguez even before the elbow injury cropped up last year. He got off to an amazing start, and I think a lot of people are still hanging their hats on Dominguez's first 19 games when he had a 1.61 ERA in 22 and a third innings, when he struck out 35.8% of hitters and walked just 3.7%, when he allowed a batting average of 133 and a whip of 0.58. Since June 23rd of 2018, which was from his 20th game on, through when he got hurt last year, he put up a 3.88 ERA in 60 and a third innings. He struck out 28.5% of batters, walked 11.9%, and allowed an average of 204 with a whip of 1.28. But if you look at his numbers last year, they're even worse. A 4.01 ERA allowed opponents to hit 250 against him with a 4.02 FIP and a 1.46 whip. His velocity was down about a mile an hour last year, likely because of the elbow pain. And I don't know how much of his struggles last year were because of the elbow pain that he was feeling. But my point is, he went from being a stud reliever to a half decent reliever after his first from his 20th game on to the end of the season in 2018. Now that's fine. You know, if Sir Anthony Dominguez gives them a 3 ERA and gives them some quality relief outings, I think that's great. That doesn't necessarily make him a lockdown arm in the back of the bullpen. So I just don't think the Phillies can rely on him to be that. And I don't want them to rush him back. That's not what I'm saying. I think they need to bring Sir Anthony Dominguez along slowly. I think they need to make sure that he's healthy. But what I wanted was an alternate plan in place. And the Phillies didn't go out and do that. And as you mentioned just a second ago, David Hopman, with your question, I think they are thinking about either one of Velasquez or Pivetta transitioning to the bullpen in spring training after ramping up as a starter. And I was talking with Ellen Adair about this on the podcast last week. I don't like that idea. I don't think that's good. I think both of those guys want to start. I think it's going to be a disappointment if one of them loses a starting battle and ends up as a relief pitcher in the bullpen. I think it should. I want this team. What would be great, I think, is for them to identify who the reliever is going to be and who's going to be in the rotation fairly soon in spring training. Because I think one of those two guys, whoever it is, needs to get it in their mind that they're going to be a bullpen piece. Because I don't think you can rely on either one of those guys. They have great stuff. They have the stuff to be a great eighth inning relief pitcher. They have the stuff to be a great closer. Nick Pivetta has great stuff. He could be a terrific closer if he embraced it, like Brett Myers did when he got moved to the bullpen because of injury in the 2007 season. So could Sir Anthony Dominguez regain his form? Could he be an under 3 ERA guy? Could he be a shutdown 8th inning reliever, 9th inning guy? It could happen. It could happen, but I'm not counting on it, and I don't think you should count on it either. And it is troublesome to me that the Phillies have done nothing with the bullpen. They've done nothing with the bullpen. I would still like to see them go and get a guy like Colin McHugh, who I think can be a good reliever slash starter. He was very good as a reliever last year. That's a move I would make, but it's probably costing more than the Phillies want to pay because of they're trying to stay under that luxury tax, and that's just the way of the world. That's the way it's working. So that's how that's going to go down, and it's a little bit worrisome that the Phillies are going into the season with a bullpen where they're really relying on a lot of internal options, Sir Anthony Dominguez chief among them. All right, some other Phillies notes before we get to the Patreon mailbag. Odubel Herrera has cleared waivers and has been optioned to AAA. He is expected to be in minor league camp when the team arrives in Clearwater in about a month or so. My question is, if Herrera is still with the team, if he's still with the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs once the regular season starts, which could happen, what happens if the Phillies suffer and a number of injuries to the outfield and Herrera is still there? Does he return? Do they call him up? I don't think anybody wants that to happen. Nobody wants to see Odubel Herrera on the big league team. But if he's a part of the team, if he's in the organization, if he's a Lehigh Valley Iron Pig and the Phillies lose Adam Haseley, Roman Quinn, and maybe somebody else for a period of time, and Odubel Herrera is sitting there in AAA, I wonder if they'd call him up. Now, what will probably happen is, and this will probably happen by the time you hear this podcast, is that his agent will probably ask for his release, and the Phillies will release him. And then he'll be free to sign with another team, but the Phillies will still be on the hook for his entire salary. But it is interesting. If he is with the team once the season starts and they suffer some injuries, would they call him up? I don't think they would. But if he's on the team, if he's on the AAA roster, I wonder if they almost have to. I don't know what the rules are for that, but can they continue to overlook him? I guess they could. That would make for a very, very uncomfortable situation for all involved. So I think the plan is that he will be released by the team once his agent asks the team to release him. Also, Drew Smyly has signed with the Giants, and this is proof that the Phillies really are not going to do anything else this offseason, because that's the one move I really thought the Phillies would make, is to bring back Drew Smyly, but he's apparently getting $4 million from the Giants. $4 million to go sign to. He signed a 1-year deal with the Giants. $4 million, which is, again, probably why the Phillies weren't involved, because they're only about $5 to $6 million under the luxury tax. And so Drew Smyly goes to reconnect with his old manager in San Francisco, Gabe Kapler. And while Smyly was not good with the Phillies, he wasn't horrible. He had a 4.45 ERA in 12 starts for the Phillies, 62 in two-thirds innings, with a 4.79 FIP, struck out 9.8 batters per nine, but walked three per nine. He wasn't good. He wasn't that good, but he wasn't awful. He was awful for the Rangers before coming to the Phillies last year, an 8.42 ERA in 51 and a third innings, but he settled down a little bit. His first two starts were dynamic for the Phillies, and then after that, it kind of went down the drain. But Drew Smyly going to play reunited with Gabe Kapler out in San Francisco. Well, up next, we're going to take a look at the Patreon mailbag. We're going to answer some questions from Patreon members, and that's up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season, so we're going to open up the Patreon mailbag, and we do some Twitter mailbags as well. If we're a little low on the Patreon mailbag, I'll open it up to the Twitter folks, and we'll do it that way. But whenever we do a mailbag, we always prioritize the mailbag questions of the Patreon members of Hittin' Season. And again, you can become a Patreon member of Hittin' Season and get your questions in first by going to patreon.com/hittinseason and sign up on the $5 a month tier. And there's also lots of other good bonus stuff that you're going to get when you do that. So make sure you check it out, patreon.com/hittinseason. I don't think any of these guys, any of these folks who have emailed questions will have any, would complain at all about being Patreon members. And we'll start with Blake Dubin, one of our great Patreon members. He asks, my question is about the minor league system. I feel like a lot of people in Philly really downplay it, if I'm honest, and by my own opinion, I think it's pretty good. Ethan Lindau, Connor Siebold, Jojo Romero, Luis Garcia, Spencer Howard, Alec Bohm, Bryson Stott, and Rafael Marchand all seem like they have a lot of talent to go along with some others like Adonis Medina, who had down years. How valuable is it, really, and how can you measure that value? Well, I'm looking at what most of the prospect analysts have said, and they know better than I do, and I think at best, the Phillies farm system is probably middle of the pack. I think most people would probably have it in the upper 20s. The reason for that is there is not a lot of impact talent that's close to the majors. The only two guys you have impact talents that are close to the majors are Alec Boehm and Spencer Howard. What you do have is a lot of depth type pieces. You've got a lot of players in the organization that could be decent number five starters, number four starters, decent relief pitchers, decent utility middle infielders, I mean decent bench bats. You don't have a lot of star players in this farm system, and that's what's really holding it back. I mean, look at a guy like Jojo Romero, for example. I think his future as a starter looked pretty good up until last year when he just lost it, and they're now transitioning him into a relief pitcher. Luis Garcia was a high riser last year, but he was dreadful at the plate last season, and so his stock is down a little bit. We'll see what we get from Bryson Stott this year. Marchand also seems like kind of I've heard is a more of a utility in infielder type guy. Connor Siebold does not have number one or number two starter type stuff. He's a number four, number five type guy if all breaks right. The only two guys that are really upper echelon prospects are Spencer Howard and Alec Boehm. Bryson Stott might get there, and we'll see how he does this year. But you got to, Mickey Moniak, Jalen Ortiz, some of these guys were supposed to be really good prospects, and they've just not panned out. And so I don't think it's a bad system, but if the Phillies wanted to swing a big trade, they don't have the bullets to do it. They don't have the big guns to do it. And they don't have a lot of impact pieces to fill in at the big league level. We'll see what Adam Haseley can give the team this year, but nobody is predicting him to be an all-star. There's not many potential all-stars in the Phillies farm system, and in the good teams, the ones that are in the top tens, they have future stars in the farm system, at least one or two. And I don't think the Phillies have anything like that. Again, Boehm and Howard could be starters. I think Howard has number two starter potential. Alec Boehm has the potential to be a starting third baseman in the majors, but we'll see how that goes. They'll get their shot this year at some point, and we'll have a little bit more clarity. And listen, one of the other things, Blake, is that there's always some prospects that jump up every year and kind of make themselves known. And that will probably happen this year, too. There'll be one or two prospects that nobody's talking about that by the end of the year we'll see in a lot of people's top five, top 10 Phillies prospects. And you just kind of wait and see who those guys are. And I'll have some prospect folks, some minor league experts on the podcast here in the coming weeks, and we can dig into that a little bit more, because I know a lot of you guys like to hear about the minor leaguers and all that. We'll get into some of that in the coming weeks. I'll have some of our really good guests. We've got Jay Floyd, who's a great minor league expert. We've got Matt Winkleman, who's really great. We've got some of our own guys at the Good Fight who are really good with prospects. Eric Longenhagen's also really good with Phil's prospects. So we've got a good stable of people we can talk to, and we'll jump into that here over the next few weeks or so. All right, moving on. Dan Noel asks, have you heard any updates on the whole Philly Fanatic legal money grab? And this involves a case where the company that invented the Philly Fanatic is suing the Phillies, saying that they own the character, they own the creature. The Phillies are saying it belongs to them. This story made headlines in November. I did a little Google search on this, Dan, and tried to talk to some people who wrote about it previously. There apparently have been no new developments, at least nothing that's been made public. So unfortunately, I don't really have an update for you on that. But at the end of the day, I don't think the Fanatic's going anywhere. I really wouldn't worry about it. I don't think there's a judge in the world that's going to say the Phillies can't continue to use the Philly Fanatic in some way. I think this is a money thing. The Phillies, if they want to continue to use the Philly Fanatic, will pay this company whatever a judge tells them to pay, if that's what it comes down to. But at the end of the day, the Philly Fanatic's not going anywhere. He's too iconic, and nobody wants to see the Fanatic go away over some kind of legal issue like this. Andrew Seddon asks, how high are your expectations for Scott Kingery? Who performs better, him or Gregorius? I think Kingery could be a breakout player for the team this year. I think he could be an all-star. We saw that he could play at an all-star level for much of the first half last year, and then I don't know if he just wore out. Pitchers started pitching him a little bit differently, and he had trouble adjusting, moving all over the place, messed with his offense. All of those things are possible reasons why he kind of fell apart, But I think if you play Scott Kingery at one position next year, you play him at third base or you play him at second base, I think he's going to perform better. So I do think Kingery can improve in 2020. I really do. My expectations are that he'll probably be a three-win player again. I don't know that he's going to be worth a whole lot more than that. He was a three-win player, according to Baseball Reference, last year, and I think he could be about that again this year, maybe a little bit better if he's more consistent in the second half of the season. As far as who performs better, him or Didi Gregorius, I guess if we're talking wins above replacement, I would lean towards Gregorius because he's done it in the past and Kingery hasn't. We've seen Gregorius be a four-win player when he's healthy. We've seen him be more of an offensive force in the lineup than Kingery when he's healthy. Kingery's a better defender. I'm very curious to see what Gregorius' defensive numbers are going to look like once the regular season starts, because his defensive numbers, as you'll hear in just a minute with our stat of the week, were awful. But he was also coming back from Tommy John surgery, so there are some mitigating factors there for sure. But I think at the moment I would say Gregorius performs better than Scott Kingery this year, because I do think Gregorius will bounce back and have a decent 2020 season. Tom Snow asks, do you guys think it would have been more practical to sign two pitchers, say Julio Teheran and Hyunjin Ryu, than to put all the eggs in their baskets in Wheeler? That's a fascinating question, Tom, and I really thought a lot about this after I saw your question. And I'm kind of on the fence about it. I think at the end of the day, I'm happier going with Zach Wheeler, because he gives you the possible upside of a number two starter. I liked the idea of Teheran and Wheeler. I liked, at the beginning of the offseason, I probably would have said I would rather have Hyunjin Ryu than Zach Wheeler. But given how much money went to pitchers this offseason and how much Wheeler ended up getting, I think that getting Wheeler and the possibility, when you're going with Hyunjin Ryu and Julio Teheran, you're pulling a couple of veterans who are getting older, who've had issues staying healthy in the part of Ryu or staying consistent with the part of Julio Teheran. The upside of Zach Wheeler is much higher than either of those two guys, and that's what you're banking on when you're getting Zach Wheeler. But I can certainly see the argument for Julio Teheran and Hyunjin Ryu. I just wonder, are you going to get... it's a tough one. This is a tough one. I think I would rather go with Zach Wheeler than Teheran and Ryu, because I'm not sure if Ryu can stay healthy. Julio Teheran is kind of up and down, but a rotation with Aaron Nola, Hyunjin Ryu, Julio Teheran, Jake Arrieta, and Zach Eflin, you know what? I think I kind of like that rotation a little bit better than I do Nola, Wheeler, Arrieta, Pavetta Velasquez, and Eflin. That's a good question, Tom. I think I would say Julio Teheran and Hyunjin Ryu. I really do. If I felt confident, I would have Ryu for most of the season. If I can get 26 starts out of Hyunjin Ryu and Julio Teheran, yeah. I think I'd rather roll with those two guys and put Velasquez and Pavetta in the bullpen, rather than go with Zach Wheeler and try and force feed Pavetta or Velasquez in a starting spot. I didn't think I was going to lean that way, but as I thought about the rotation in my mind, I think I would rather have Teheran and Ryu rather than just Wheeler. That's a very good question, Tom. And I'd be curious what you guys think about this. I want you guys to hit me up on Twitter and let me know. Let's call it hashtag Phillies rotation, okay? Let me know, would you prefer Teheran and Ryu or Wheeler? And you know what I'll do? I'll put up a Twitter poll, and I'll ask you, and you guys can respond there, because I'm very curious. I'll bet you it'll be a 50-50 split or something very close to that. Anyway, let's move on. We got a couple more here. Rob Erskine asks, the Phillies just announced their non-roster invitees to spring training. Besides the more popular names we're used to, Bohm, Howard, Moniak, do we expect to see any other names on this list end up in the majors this year? Well, let's break this down a little bit here, Rob, and let me read the other names of the non-roster invitees. Connor Brogdon, Kyle Doughy, Tyler Gilbert, Derek Hall, Damon Jones, Henry Lartik, Austin Listy, Nick Maton, Mickey Moniak, Ramon Rosso, Addison Russ, Zach Warren, Luke Williams. I will tell you that the position players listed here, probably don't have much of an impact at the major league level this year, aside from Bohm and Howard and maybe Moniak, But when you're talking about guys like Connor Brogdon and Kyle Doughy, Tyler Gilbert, some of those type of guys, you know, Zach Warren, Luke, those are guys who could be bullpen pieces. Anybody invited who could be a bullpen piece this year could have an impact at the major league level. Those are some names I could envision seeing in the majors. I can't see Maton ending up in the majors this year. I can't see Derek Hall in the majors. Austin Listy. I just can't see those guys on the big league ball club this year. But any young relief pitcher, absolutely. Absolutely. They are going to be looking for any exciting young arm they can find in spring training. And if any of those guys performs really well in the spring, I could certainly, absolutely, 100% see any of those guys in the Phillies bullpen, because that's what they're looking for. They're looking for someone internal to step up and deliver for them. And spring training's the time to do that for a lot of those guys. So all those guys, all the pitchers that I just mentioned among that list, yes, I would say that they have a chance to be called up to the majors this year and make an impact, for sure. Last Patreon mailbag question comes from Nafisa Squire, asking, I assume this has already been asked, but will the arbitration trip for Real Muto generate bad blood with the Phillies? Will a deal extension get done before arbitration? I personally think there is no bad blood between them. It's just business. And Nafisa, that's what we talked about on the last episode of the podcast. Liz and I went over this on episode 350. I think this is all about the Phillies trying to stay a certain number under the luxury tax. JT Realmuto wants to set a new benchmark for catchers in this particular spot of arbitration. The Players Union, I'm sure, is urging him, has urged him to continue this fight, which is why you're probably not going to see a compromised number, which is why you're probably going to see this go to arbitration. The highest a catcher in this position has ever been paid in arbitration is something a little over $8 million, and the Phillies are offering $10 million. And they're going to go to the arbitrator and they're going to say, listen, we're offering $1.5 million more dollars than any other catcher at this stage of arbitration has ever gotten before. We think it's fair. And JT Realmuto is going to go before the arbitrator and say, it needs to be more. Look at all I've done. I won the Silver Slugger last year. I was a Gold Glover last year. I was named the catcher on the All-MLB team, which essentially says I'm the best catcher in baseball. So, yes, the $10 million might be a raise from whatever the previous catcher got, but I'm head and shoulders better than any catcher has ever been in this position. Therefore, I deserve $12.4 million. He does probably deserve $12.4 million, and the Phillies, I'm sure, would pay him $12.4 million, but they're probably getting pressure from the other owners to keep the price down a little bit. So this is just business. It's just finances. My guess is that they'll have an extension announced in spring training. They're going to have the arbitration done first or have them agree to a one-year deal before arbitration for 2020. They don't want the extension to kick in until 2021 to avoid going over the luxury tax this year. So that's why they've got to get this 2020 season deal done before they can announce the extension. They may already have the extension done. They may already have the parameters in place. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they're way farther down the road on an extension than they are on a one-year deal here. So I think they just have to kind of get this out of the way. They'll go before the arbitrator. They'll make their arguments. And at the end of the day, Realmuto will probably get what he wants. He'll probably win his arbitration case. And then once spring training starts, they can announce the extension starting in 2021. That's my read of the situation. That's how I think it's going to go down. So thank you to all the Patreon members who submitted questions this time around. We'll do another one of these coming up in the next month or so. Probably once we hit spring training, we'll do a spring training mailbag as we get things ramped up. All right, let's move on to our stat of the week. And there is a new defensive metric out right now. It just came out, called outs above average. It's actually been in place for outfielders for about a year now, but just new, brand new. It's now available for infielders too. And so I wanted to take a look at how the Phillies infield measured up. And luckily, The Good Fight's very own Paul Boyer wrote a piece about that this week. So make sure you check that out. Go to Paul's Twitter feed at Paul_Boyer. You know Paul. He's a great friend of the podcast. Joins us about once a month or so. He looked at the numbers and found that Reese Hoskins is actually a little bit above average with the glove, with a +4 outs above average, OAA, they call it. That ties him for fourth among first basemen behind Matt Olson, Christian Walker, and Paul Goldschmidt in all of baseball. At shortstop, you can see why the Phillies want to move Jean Segura to second base. He was worth -4 OAA last season, and the numbers said he was especially bad ranging to his right. The Phillies' new shortstop, Didi Gregorius, as I mentioned a little bit ago, clearly suffering from his elbow injury last year, was horrific in half a season. -13 OAA. The Phillies are obviously hoping that that gets better in 2020. We don't have any data prior to last year because this stat is brand new, so we can't see how that number compares or what he was doing when he was healthy with the Yankees in 2016, 17, and 18. And Scott Kingery, looking at third base, -1 OAA, which makes him an average third baseman, which, as Paul mentioned in his piece, really is amazing when you consider he'd never played third base before last year. He's a second baseman by trade. It just goes to show you what an incredible athlete Scott Kingery is, and that's why I think he could be the Phillies' breakout player in 2020. Folks, that'll do it for this edition of the podcast. Thanks for joining in. And again, a reminder to check us out at the Patreon, where we have lots of good stuff there, patreon.com/hittinseason. As far as the main The Good Fight podcast feed, don't forget to check out the latest edition of Continued Success with Justin and Liz. Check out the latest Dirty Inning with Justin and Trev. Tell all your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. You can get it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. That's where we are. And leave a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts and a review if you get a spare moment. That helps us out a great deal. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.